Yes, Yahweh's Covenant people is live tonight. Hope everybody's hearing me clearly. Pastor Eli James, Pastor Steve is not with us. He's spending several more days, actually, even beyond the Passover feast down in Kentucky. We had a really good gathering there, 2 days in a row of no buying or selling, because the beginning day of Feast of Unleavened Bread is a Sabbath, and of course the Wave Sheaf Day is a Sabbath, so a lot of people were trying to figure out a way to break the law and buy stuff, but very little was open anyway in the campground, so temptation thwarted. But thank you, folks. I see Pastor Dan's in the chat room. Stuart 141 and Captain Witness, Rebelin, good to see you all there, Pastor Eli James. All right, now tonight we're going to be starting the three-headed eagle chapters of Second Esdras. Hello, Brother Abair, good to hear from you. And by the way, while we're there, Patrick of Mississippi delivered two boxes of shirts, long sleeve shirts, that say "The Goyim Know, The Goyim Know," and those will be offered for sale and for donation on Eurofolk Radio if we can get our act together and get all these things, all these notices on the front page so people know about them. So, and then I have to have a talk with Paul about all this. But now that I'm back and not working off my laptop and my hotspot, I can get a few things accomplished, which I couldn't do while I was away. But just a quick fill-in. On last Saturday, we had a gathering in a mountain home, and Doc Waterman was there, and many people. We had a gathering of 15 people who we had it on Saturday from noon to 6. And it's a kind of unbelievable 10-day period for me. It was rain on practically every single day that I was gone from the city of Chicago. It was raining here when I left, and then it was raining down in central Illinois, and it was raining in Arkansas and Missouri, et cetera, et cetera. So it was, except for Sunday. Sunday, from the when we had the feast scheduled from noon to 6, it stopped raining. And then right around 6 o'clock, the rains, it started drizzling again. So Yahweh was making sure, because we didn't have an indoor facility to have this feast. And Jim, who's just outside of Harrison, Arkansas, and I think I've mentioned he's the one that's building the trailer park for Christian Identity people, he fell violently ill and didn't feel up to hosting the event. And also, he had done a lot of digging up. And he said the whole, with all the rain, he said the trailer park was just a sea of mud. So we had to cancel those plans. And so we just did it on Doc Waterman's backyard patio. So, and that went very well. That went very well. A lot of good identity discussion. And several new people that I had never met before, and and some old people who haven't been to any feast events in quite a while, like Jack from Flippin, and two other people from Flippin, Arkansas. I guess the Flippin, Arkansas is a new breeding ground for Christian Identity people. So that was fun. That was a lot of fun. We had a real great time. Almost caught my hair on fire when I was throwing a barbecue the coals into the fire. Doc Waterman has all these new age gadgets that work 100% more efficiently than others. So he had this barbecue grill that got so hot, and the flames were going so high when I was pouring the coals in, the bag caught on fire. So, and it nearly, oh man, it was a trip, put it that way. But we finally got things under control and had a halfway normal gathering with burgers and all kinds of veggies and what's up, and it's just a really great time. So then I finally made it back over to Kentucky, where Pastor Steve and Leroy and Marilyn and Patrick and Coral and Brenda were at. So we fellowshipped with them. I was there for about 4 nights. And believe me, folks, it was cold. Cold and rainy. So it just, the cold and rain just kept on continuing throughout this feast. And one night the storm was so bad that the tent we had over the picnic table blew over and broke a lot of the connections. Fortunately, I had one along with me, so we swapped them out. And I don't know if the other one's salvageable or not. But in any case, we still had a real good time. Everybody was in great spirits despite all the rain and despite all the cold. Patrick had brought, he rented a trailer, which was pretty big. So we were able to have the feast indoors because it was really cold. This is the coldest Passover feast I've ever been to. Normally we eat outside because it's usually, by this time of year, it's somewhat warm. The days are sunny and mild, but no such luck this time. But fortunately with the double wide trailer, or at least the crank out trailer, we had plenty of room for everybody, so that was great. So anyway, that's a very quick update on our Passover feast. And as I said, Pastor Steve's still there, and he'll be joining me next Friday on Yahweh's Covenant People. Now also, we see that I'm trying to get a hold of Greg. And I talked to him by phone. He said he had his computer problems fixed, but I tried to contact him twice tonight, and he's not around. So I left him a message if he happens to mosey on over, call, and then we can get you on the show today. So last time when we, I think it was Pastor Steve and I, did chapter 10 of 2 Esdras. And that was the mourning woman, who is, of course, Israel, the angel or the spirit of Israel, weeping over all of the dead and unrighteous Israelites who aren't going to make it into the kingdom. And you know, then the subject turns to a completely different direction in chapter 11. Which we'll go into tonight. And this is the three-headed eagle vision. And Greg and I had done a series on this a couple years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I think I'll just go through this slowly because when Greg comes back, he's going to want to cover some of this material over again. But this is primarily introductory material, chapter 11. Of 2 Esdras. And I'll just jump right in here. Then I saw a dream, and behold, there came up from the sea an eagle, which had 12 feathered wings and 3 heads. And I saw, and behold, she spread her wings over all the earth, and all the winds of the air blew on her and were gathered together. Now, of course, whenever we see all the earth, especially in the Old Testament, and even in the New Testament, we're talking about all of the land, all of that portion of the planet Earth where the Israelites dwelt. Rarely does the word earth, and it's usually Eretz. Eretz means land. It doesn't mean planets. There's a different Hebrew word for planet. And I think it's Kabel, if I'm not mistaken, because Pastor Steve and I talked about this during Passover. But Eretz does not mean planet. There's a different Hebrew word for that. So we're talking about all of the parts of the earth that fall under this eagle, where this eagle had power. For example, you can say that Alexander the Great had a kingdom which dominated all the earth, but it didn't dominate Africa, although he did go to Alexandria, Egypt. He founded Alexandria, Egypt. And then he went even as far as India. But, you know, so Greece, Mesopotamia, Egypt, and India were the extent of his domain and not the entire planet. So whenever you see all the earth, take that with a grain of salt. It does not mean the entire planet. Rarely does it ever mean that. And so that's why we can say with great confidence that Noah's flood did not cover the entire earth. It only covered the entire Eretz of the territory. The deluge was global, because every civilization that survived it has stories of a great deluge and lots of flooding, but nothing like the flooding that occurred in the Mesopotamian area, especially in Turkey, where, of course, the ark finally rested. So there we had an upwelling of aquifer water, tremendous earthquakes, etc., etc. And it was only in that part of the earth where the Noah's flood was that catastrophic. The rest of the planet wasn't quite that bad. So, and there's no way that Noah's ark went to Australia to bring, to bring up kangaroos and platypuses and other animals indigenous to Australia and then take them back. The Bible doesn't say any such thing. So the assumption that that flood was global is simply wrong. And we're talking about a particular area here. Verse 3, "And I beheld, and out of her feathers there grew other contrary feathers, and they became little feathers and small." So I think what we can say here in general, first let me just cut to the chase. This whole vision of the three-headed eagle has to do with the various stages of the Holy Roman Empire. The Holy Roman Empire, and the last segment of this vision has to do with our end times, and we'll get to that. I believe this is three chapters in all, and we see that in these end times, the very last beast or empire or kingdom is that little rancid state of Israel, full of trouble. The little kingdom full of trouble is how 2nd Esdras conveys it. And that's what we're dealing with here today, of course. And we'll lead up to this. We'll try to bring you up to speed with all of the different entities of the Holy Roman Empire that we're talking about here. So the final feathers, the contrary feathers, are the Zionist state. And also the United Nations, I think, is being prophesied here in the eagle vision. But, verse 4, "But her heads were at rest. The head in the midst was greater than the other, yet it rested with the residue." So it's telling us that the three heads which crown the eagle did not come to life until later on. So again, we're talking about the three heads. So we're kind of working our way up the body of the three-headed eagle. "Moreover, I beheld, and lo, the eagle flew with her feathers and reigned upon the earth over them that dwelt therein." Again, this is upon the Eretz, upon that land which was controlled and ruled over by the Holy Roman Empire. Now, of course, you can't include Byzantium, because Byzantium was outside of the purview of the Holy Roman Empire. And so we're talking, well, when did the Holy Roman Empire begin? It began in 608, sorry. The claim by the Pope, the papacy, began around 600 AD. After making war against the various bishoprics that were established by the Apostle Paul. And there was no such thing as a bishop of bishops or pope until around 600 AD, although the Bishop of Rome was very powerful and most powerful of all of the bishops up until around 600 AD, when the papacy was actually begun to claimed dominance over the other bishoprics. But the Holy Roman Empire did not begin until 800 AD, when Charlemagne was crowned first emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. So that first crowning of a Holy Roman Emperor occurred in 800 AD. So, moreover, I beheld, and lo, the eagle flew with her feathers and rained upon the earth over them that dwelt therein. So, we're talking about Europe primarily. The European empires, European nations that would ultimately fall under the domination of the papacy and the Catholic kings that were crowned by the papacy. Number 6, and I saw that all things under heaven were subject unto her, and no man spake against her, no, not one creature upon the earth. Well, you can see, and the history of the Holy Roman Empire under the papacy was a very brutal one, very brutal one. And the Crusades were organized under the Holy Roman Empire as well. So you see, this was a very, very powerful military empire, and the papacy did not use any, very little subtlety, really. This was a simply brutal military empire, and the popes were using the military power of the various kings of France, Germany, Spain, Denmark, Holland, etc. We're using the military might of all of these Roman Catholic kings to suppress the people. And that's why it was called the Dark Ages, because the papacy would not allow any light to come in. And verse 7, and I beheld, and lo, the eagle rose upon her talons, and spake to her feathers, saying, watch not all at once, sleep every one in his own place, and watch by course. But let the heads be preserved for the last. Again, this is saying that the three heads will not be stirred until the very end of the vision. Until the very end of the vision. So let me just go through this. And I'm reading from, copy this. This is the online version of Sacred Texts. Okay, hello Swamp Fox, and I just placed the link to the text I'm reading from, the Sacred Text website, and I just read from verse 9, but let the heads be preserved for the last. Verse 10, and I beheld, and lo, the voice went not out of her heads, but from the midst of her body, and I numbered her contrary feathers, and behold, there were 8 of them. So what could this mean, contrary feathers? Well, apparently kingdoms that were offshoots of the Holy Roman Empire that ultimately made war against it, that could be an interpretation here. And maybe I should go to my article on the subject. It's over at anglosaxonisrael.com. Where we have the interpretation of the vision. But the first chapter, which is chapter 11 here, doesn't have a lot of explanation. It's just going through the statements of the plain vision that we're seeing. So we'll get into more of the interpretation next time. So I looked, and behold, after verse 11, verse 12, and I looked, and behold, on the right side there arose one feather and reigned over all the earth. So this is talking about one of the earlier kings of the Holy Roman Empire. And this may be Charlemagne, because he was the first one. Verse 13, and so it was that when it rained, the end of it came, and the place thereof appeared no more. So the next following stood up and reigned and had a great time, which I guess all the emperors did. And it happened that when it rained, the end of it came also, like as the first, so that it appeared no more. So one king after another. And then came a voice unto it and said, Hear thou that hast borne rule over the earth so long, this I say unto thee, before thou beginnest to appear no more, there shall none of thee attain unto thy time, neither unto the half thereof. So this, I believe we're talking about the second king, that none of the ones following this second king will rule as long as he. Verse 17, there shall none after thee attain unto thy time, neither unto the half thereof. Verse 18, then arose the third and reigned as the other before and appeared no more also. So went it with all the residue at one after another, as that everyone reigned and then appeared no more. Now, I think what this is saying is that, as was often the case in the ancient world, a particular king would reign and then perhaps abdicate or leave the country to fight a war, in which case he would have a son or someone else rule in his stead until he returned. So apparently this type of thing was not happening under this three-headed eagle vision. They reigned until they died or until they were killed in battle or something like that. Verse 20, then I beheld, and lo, in process of time, the feathers that followed stood up on the right side, that they might rule also. And some of them ruled, but within a while they appeared no more. For some of them were set up, but ruled not. So we're going to try to figure out who these eight are. And maybe I should actually go into the interpretation, because there's so much here that that it would be really difficult to just go one after another without any idea of what's going on. So let's go into the interpretation. And so as far as verse 17, and let me post this interpretation into the chat room. Okay, hello, tea time. Glad to be back. It was a really long trip for Passover, a really long trip. So rather than read all 46 verses and not have any idea of what's going on, I'm going to jump to the article at AngloSaxonIsrael.com, the part two, the interpretation. And let me go into this. The interpretation by Dr. Eugene Scott. According to Dr. Scott's interpretation, now let's look at, he doesn't start until the last 12. So let me see if I can go into chapter 11. Yeah, okay. Second Esdras 12, the interpretation. Okay, so the interpretation is given within Second Esdras chapter 12. And so it came to pass while the lion represents the Messiah at the judgment day, spoke these words unto the eagle, I saw, and behold, the head that remained and the four wings appeared no more, and the two went unto it and set themselves up to reign, and their kingdom was small and full of uproar. And this is the kingdom that's overlooked by everybody. Okay, I see that this interpretation is not very, very complete. he starts with Francis in 1637. This was one of the Holy Roman Empire kings. First Francis, 1637. Then Leopold the First, 1658. So he doesn't start with Charlemagne, as I suggested is the correct interpretation here. But I think he's doing just chapter 12. Okay, so let me continue here. I'm just going to have to muddle through. Sorry, folks, I didn't have much time to prepare for this show. And I listened to our last show, and I realized we were jumping right into the three-headed eagle vision. And so today I'm just going to do introductory stuff. And hopefully Greg Howard will be with us next week, because it's good to have multiple commentaries on this chapter. Okay, so we were at verse 17. This second feather shall reign longer than any of the other feathers by twice the length of the next competitor, is the meaning of verse 17. And a lot of this, you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that, well, I don't know what the King James, because the second Esdras was actually part of the original 1611 King James Version. And that's not the version that I have here. And it would have been a tremendous struggle for the King James translators to know what these verses are talking about. And I think Dr. Eugene Scott was actually the very first person in history to understand that this whole vision is about the Holy Roman Empire. That's what this chapter, these two chapters, 11 and 12 of 2 Esdras, are talking about the Holy Roman Empire. There's no doubt in my mind that he's correct about this. And so because nothing else in history, especially in the history of the Israelite nations, fits it, okay? And of course, nothing like this is in Revelation or in Daniel, because Daniel and Revelation tie together the eight beasts from Egypt all the way down to the Rothschild banking family, where the Holy Roman Empire is simply ignored. Although the papacy is certainly the sixth beast of the book of Revelation. There's no doubt, but there's no, and of course the ten kings are references to the various nations of the Holy Roman Empire, but that's it. It's very brief, no mention of, no details about those ten kings whatsoever in Revelation. So I think what we're seeing here is 2 Esdras is filling us in as to those ten kings, and which of course were the ten nation states of the Holy Roman Empire, but not in chronological order. What Eugene Scott here has figured out is that these are kings of the Holy Roman Empire in chronological order. So let's continue. So verse 18, then arose the third and reigned as the other before and appeared no more also. So each one in his turn reigned over the Holy Roman Empire. So went it with all the residue one after another, as that every one reigned and then appeared no more. So no one reigned more than once. All of them had their day and they were succeeded by another emperor. Then I beheld, verse 20, then I beheld, and lo, in process of time, the feathers that followed stood upon the right side, that they might rule also. And some of them ruled, but within a while they appeared no more. So this, from the face of it, would suggest that there was some kind of schism within the Holy Roman Empire, or there were dual reigns going on that never really challenged this sequence of kings under the papacy. So we can surmise those two possibilities as we continue here. Verse 21, for some of them were set up, but ruled not. So it sounds like there were new countries that were being formed. Some of them were set up but never really ruled. Others did rule but not for very long. And so I think that's what this is referring to. And in the history of Europe, you can think of Lithuania and Poland, maybe Bohemia, etc., etc. These nations had their day in the sun, but they weren't always, their kings weren't always crowned by the Holy Roman Emperor. I think Russia of the Tsars may be one of these kingdoms that is talked about here, because I don't think, no, I'm pretty sure that the papacy never crowned any of the Tsars, never selected any of the Tsars to rule over Russia, and certainly not to rule over the Holy Roman Empire. So this would, one of these outside kingdoms would probably be Russia under the Tsars, who had a totally independent, probably because they were so far east, they were pretty much, and they were also Orthodox. The Russian Empire was Orthodox Church, not the Catholic Church, although there were provinces of Russia that were Roman Catholic. But as far as I can tell, they lived amongst one another in peace. Poland was, of course, Catholic. And there was often very much strife between the Tsars of Russia and the Polish princes, and the Tsars of Russia and the German princes. There were lots of strife, even though they were cousins, all right? The Tsars of Russia were cousins of the German Kaisers and the British kings and queens, the Danish kings and queens, etc., etc. But one group, the Russians, were of the Orthodox faith, which means they were an offshoot of Byzantium, and never under the rule of the papacy. So they would have to be excluded. But it's possible that, and in fact, I'm aware that Ivan the Terrible had a lot of trouble with certain of his lords who weren't very loyal to him and Russia, and had actually made deals with other countries such as the Poles, and actually sided with the Poles against him in certain situations. And so he didn't take kindly to this, and he had them all executed. So that's why he is called Ivan the Terrible. So he apparently had stayed out of the influence of the Holy Roman Empire, and I would say that's a good thing for Russia, because the Roman Catholic Church was never really Christian. And even today, it's nothing but a fraudulent church. And then, after this, I looked, and behold, the 12 feathers appeared no more, nor the 2 little feathers. And there was no more upon the eagle's body, but 3 heads that rested, and 6 little wings. So, what this is all talking about is the various convoluted nation springing up and dying out in the history of Europe during the time of the Holy Roman Empire. And ultimately, the Holy Roman Empire dies out, leaving 3 kings, the top 3 heads of the three-headed eagle, which we have interpreted as being Britain, Russia, and America. These are the 3. But there's also that dastardly little wing that's full of trouble, and also another wing standing to the side, which I believe is the United Nations, also full of trouble, that relies on the power and authority of these 3 eagles, 3 heads of the eagle, and are actually, subversive elements controlling the 3 heads of the eagle from behind the scenes. And certainly we can see that during the communist coup, the Jewish communist coup over Russia, that we had the subversive element of communism ruling in Russia. And then we have, of course, the Bank of England, the Jews behind the Bank of England ruling over the British Empire. And then ultimately the Jews putting their claws into America via the Federal Reserve Bank. So we see that the Jews would have taken over all of three heads of the three-headed eagle before the judgment day. And of course, this whole vision lasts until the judgment day with the second coming. That's the beautiful thing about this vision, is it tells us about the second coming. Verse 24, then saw I also that two little feathers divided themselves from the six and remained under the head that was upon the right side, for the four continued their place. And so I think this is talking about the power shift from Great Britain to America, and the United Nations and the bastard state of Israeli, Kyrgyzstan, taking residence. Well, the United Nations took residence in New York City, did it not? And of course, the ADL and AIPAC and all these other Jewish agencies have been directing the affairs of America since the Israeli state was created and even before. So we can see that this little kingdom full of trouble, namely the Israeli state, has basically destroyed Russia, destroyed Britain, and is now in the process of destroying America. And none of these three heads, as powerful as they are able to contend with these two little subversive kingdoms in their midst or behind the scenes. Verse 25, and I beheld, and lo, the feathers that were under the wing thought to set up themselves and to have the rule. Okay, well, we're talking about the Jews here, are we not? They thought to rule over the last head of the eagle. And we're seeing that the Jews are doing their damnedest to rule over us as we speak. Now, of course, only those of us in identity and a few others understand that this is what has happened to America, and that Britain has succumbed to Jewish rule, and that Russia had succumbed to Jewish rule, at least under communism. But we can see that Russia is making a resurgence under Orthodox Christianity yet again. This is something good, folks. This is not for us to be worried about. The last thing we want is a war between America and Russia. It's the Jews who want this war. Why? Because the Jews do not have the control over Russia that they did under communism. There's still plenty of Jews there, and they still have plenty of influence, but they're dealing with the Russian Orthodox Church. And Putin has passed laws against homosexuality. He does not believe in multiculturalism. So the reign that the Jews had under communism has been attenuated. It hasn't been fully overthrown, but has been attenuated. Because after all, the Russians have to deal on the international market, and you can't do that without dealing with Jews at one point or another. If Russia could be a totally independent country, they wouldn't have to deal with Jewish banks or Jewish commerce or Jewish oil, because the Jews control the oil market as well as the gold market, etc., etc. So we see that there are two entities that are trying to take over. Well, this leads me to believe that, of course, it's the United Nations and the Israeli state, because these are the two entities that were created by the Rothschilds in 1948. Verse 25, and I beheld, and lo, the feathers that were under the wing thought to set up themselves to have the rule. Verse 26, and I beheld, and lo, there was one set up, but shortly it appeared no more. And the second was sooner away than the first. Okay, so we'll have to go into the actual interpretation before we can analyze this. But shortly it appeared no more. So we're still, both of them, both the United Nations and the Israeli state are still with us. So this may be a vision of partly very close to the end. Verse 28, and I beheld, and lo, the two that remained thought also in themselves to reign. Okay, I'm sorry. What this, I guess two in turn sought to reign but disappeared. So we haven't gotten to the United Nations and the Israeli state just yet. Verse 29, and when they so thought, behold, there awaked one of the heads that were at rest, namely, it that was in the midst. For that was greater than the two other heads. So the first, the middle head, would have to be Britain. Because Britain was the most powerful country in the world. Well, we'd have to say, well, the sun never set upon the British Empire, right? Never set upon the British Empire. So it was a global empire, but it was not counted as one of the eight beasts of the book of Revelation. That was Rothschild. Rothschild, the house of Rothschild, is the eighth beast of the book of Revelation. So we're seeing here in 2nd Ezra, in the three-headed eagle vision, that these kingdoms, which were and are of our people Israel, were ruled over by the various heads of this vision. So before the communists were in charge of Russia, they were ruled over by the czars, who were, of course, Christian people, and there are many Israel people in Russia. And, of course, Britain being one of the central Israel nations, and, of course, America being one of the central Israel nations. So Britain would be the most powerful in the middle, but would ultimately be taken over by the kingdom on the right, which is America. Verse 30. And then I saw that the two other heads were joined with it. And behold, the head was turned with them that were with it, and did eat up the two feathers under the wing that would have reigned. Okay, so this is probably a period in European history where there was could be Germany, right? Germany made an attempt to establish itself and become a colonial empire, and maybe Italy, that would have reigned, but failed to reign. Verse 32, but this had put the whole earth in fear, and bear rule in it over all those that dwelt upon the earth with much oppression, and it had the governance of the world more than all the wings that had been. And that would probably be, again, it's Britain. We're talking about this head called Britain. And it was very oppressive. The British Empire pretty much destroyed every other white nation on the face of the earth, including America. Those of you who have been listening to my series on the Restoration Hour of how the British Rothschilds and the French Rothschilds created the American Civil War, but it was primarily the British who were instigating this division upon our soil. And the British Empire did its absolute best to destroy South Africa and made war against France and made war, of course, against America and Spain. So we see that this British Empire, especially since it was controlled by the Jewish banksters, once the Bank of England was created in 1694, yes, indeed, the British Empire was, in fact, one of the most oppressive and violent kingdoms on the face of the earth. Verse 33, and after this I beheld, and lo, the head that was in the midst suddenly appeared no more, like as the wings. Okay, well, the British Empire, look what's happening to Britain today. It is dying. It is dying. It is being taken over by Muslims. It is being taken over by blacks and others. Because of why? Because the Jews have flooded Britain with non-whites with the intent of totally destroying Britain. And because Britain is such a small piece of land compared to America, it's much easier to do there. and the population is much smaller in Britain. And plus, it has retracted from all of its earthly colonial empire back to Britain and Ireland. And that's pretty much all that's left of the British Empire. And even that is controlled by the Jews. And that is being destroyed by a Jewish instigation of race mixing and multiculturalism as it goes on in Britain today. So we can see that the middle head is dying. Is dying. Let me repeat verse 33. And after this I beheld, and lo, the head that was in the midst suddenly appeared no more, like as the wings. But there remained the two heads, which also in like sort ruled upon the earth and over those that dwelt therein. So that leaves Russia and America. Now, it's interesting that Russia is restoring Orthodox Christianity. I would say Britain, whatever religion Britain has left, cannot be called Christianity. Even the Anglican Church has a black bishop. So you can see that the Church of England has been utterly gutted. And, of course, Swamp Fox says, somebody stole your calendar. Sorry about that, Swamp Fox. I can send you a couple more. So just send me an email, and I'll need your address again. Okay. So sorry about that. Yeah, I mean, I have to hand it to Brother Abear. Those calendars are so beautiful that people want to steal them. okay, that's a real... how's that for as advertisement for the calendar, folks? Okay, so let me just do it right now because we're getting close to the end of the show. That if you want a copy of Brother Abear's beautiful solar calendar, feast day calendar for this year, send a check or money order for $20 to ANP, which stands for American National Publishing, Post Office Box 411373, Chicago, Illinois, 60641. Again, that's ANP, POB 411373, Chicago, Illinois, 60641. Or you can go to anglo-saxonisrael.com and order one there, and you can pay by PayPal. That PayPal link is still working. We'll see how long that works. Okay. So, Swamp Fox, yes, it was a pleasure to meet you down there in at the feast in Arkansas. The weather there was a little bit better than the weather we've been having in Kentucky. And as you know, it rained until until we had the feast start up at noon, and it began to rain right at 6 o'clock when we broke up. So that was, Yahweh gave us decent weather so we could have our barbecue. So let's, and then again, if you want to order that from anglo-saxonisrael.com, make a donation for $20 and make sure to put the word calendar in the notes and your return address. I need your return address if you do it that way. Okay. All right. Let's get back to the vision here. So we're getting close to the end times of this vision, and we see that the British Empire has had its heyday, and the head on the left and the head on the right are still going to have their chance to rule. So verse 35, and I beheld, and lo, the head upon the right side devoured it that was upon the left side. So if I'm correct that the head on the right side is America and the head on the left side is the Soviet Union, then yes, it was the Jews of America that financed the Bolshevik Revolution and financed the takeover of the Eastern European states, submitting them to communism. So we're talking about the fact that America had been secretly taken over by the International Jew and financed the destruction of Christian Russia. Verse 36. Then I heard a voice which said unto me, Look before thee, and consider the thing that thou seest. And I beheld, and lo, as it were a roaring lion chased out of the wood. And I saw that he sent out a man's voice up to the eagle and said, Now, of course, again, I reiterate that the King James translators could possibly have no idea what this vision is talking about. And it's difficult enough as it is to try to correlate biblical prophecy with world events. You have to have a Christian identity perspective to be able to get any of these prophecies correct. And it is my understanding that Dr. Eugene Scott was very much aware of Christian identity and even alluded to the 10 lost tribes being still in the world today and that they are the European nation states. Something which is very dangerous for an Orthodox minister, and he was more Orthodox than those of us who are in identity, to say. Verse 38, Hear thou, I will talk with thee, and the highest shall say unto thee. Verse 39, Art not thou it that remainest of the four beasts, whom I made to reign in my world, that the end of their times might come through them? And the fourth came and overcame all the beasts that were past, and had power over the world with great fearfulness, and over the whole compass of the earth with much wicked oppression, and so long time dwelt upon the earth with deceit. This would have to be the United Nations, in my opinion. I can't see any other, because it's the United Nations is total deceit. Although, of course, the Israeli state is as well. But we have to remember that the United Nations created the Israeli state. The Israeli state would not exist today if it were not for the resolution of the Jew banksters that control the United Nations. Verse 41, For the earth hast thou not judged with truth. Yes, the United Nations is absolute deceit. 100% deceit. For thou hast afflicted the meek. Thou hast hurt the peaceable, thou hast loved liars, and destroyed the dwellings of them that brought forth fruit, and hast cast down the walls of such as are that did thee no harm. Well, the United Nations created the Korean War, divided that country into two opposing sides. The United Nations has supported communist uprisings all around the world, especially in Africa, and has destroyed freedom-loving kingdoms wherever they might be and replaced them with communist empires. But this is not being reported in the Jew-controlled press, but you can rest assured that the United Nations has supported communist countries throughout its incarnation. Verse 43. Therefore is thy wrongful dealing come up unto the highest, and thy pride unto the mighty. The highest also hath looked upon the proud times, and behold, they are ended, and his abominations are fulfilled. And therefore appear no more, thou eagle, nor thy horrible wings, nor thy wicked feathers, nor thy malicious heads, nor thy hurtful claws, nor all thy vain body. Okay, with just a few minutes left, let me just remind everybody that when the Israelites demanded to have a king, an earthly king besides Yahweh, the prophet Samuel told us, told our forefathers, that our kings would have all of the horrible traits of the kings of the other nations that surrounded Israel at that time. And most of our kings, the vast majority of our kings, have been evil. Nevertheless, under Perez Judah, the descendants of David did produce the Messiah, because they were pure in blood, not necessarily pure in their righteousness. So that pure blood descent from David through the various kings of Judah, not through the kings of the 10 northern tribes of Israel, but through the kings of Judah, produced Yahshua, our Messiah. And of course, many of those Pharaoh's kings intermarried with the Zerah Judah line of Europe, and that's what produced these kings of the Holy Roman Empire. To the extent that all of these kingdoms dealt with Jews within their history, not all of them did, but those who did indebted the Israel people to the Jews and did great harm to our people. Some of these kings made war with the Jews and put them in ghettos and put them in chains and did not allow them to deal proudly with us, with the Christian peasants. But nevertheless, many of these kingdoms ruled over the peasantry with an iron hand and did not allow the peasantry to prosper. And that's the whole history of feudalism. Feudalism under the Holy Roman Empire was a dead-end street. That's why it was called the Dark Ages. There was no upward mobility for peasants, and it became a system which itself had to go, because the nobility lived off the hard work and taxed the peasantry in terms of their farm output. It was a very brutal and unfair system. One more verse here, verse 46. That all the earth may be refreshed and may return, being delivered from thy violence, and that she may hope for the judgment and mercy of him that made... Oh, wow, I'm missing something here. All right, we're missing a verse. Okay. Him that made it, or missing a word. Sorry, folks. So, this gives us... I try to give a brief overview of what the vision is all about. The Holy Roman Empire and the succeeding two underwings, I guess is the best way of terminating, the underwings, which are the United Nations and the Israeli state, the two most evil empires that ever ruled the earth, and they do rule the earth. There's no doubt about this at all. Any nation that tries to go against the will of the United Nations and the Israeli state faces the military wrath of whatever empire they control, and that includes America today and Britain and whatever other country they can muster against a rebellious state. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be back next Friday, and hopefully Pastor Steve will be back with us, and we'll get into chapter 12 of 2 Esdras. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you all next time.